Okay, then let's go ahead and do some wrap up then. So there were a lot of artifacts, like we had a discussion here in the classroom with, normally what I do is I have students present the findings, what they found and what they've learned. So I don't have really prepared material for this. What I will say is that, I asked you to get some key system information, and I think it's pretty important to have gotten at least the time zone out of this. Otherwise, you won't be able to determine certain logs or times which things happen. So we did find that it's European Kiev time. So that affects our time zone. Debian Linux 5.0, computer name was Dark Dimitri. The IP address is listed here. Of course, this is going to be the most of the time we're going to see a NAT IP address rather than an external IP address. That's an unfortunate thing that we have to deal with. Then we did find two potential user accounts, right? So Dimitri and libuuid, although that's a that's mostly smoke and mirrors. But Dimitri was able to log in. It's the only one that you had a web or a bash history for. And to see how many times he logged in, I looked for his history in auth log. And the wtemp file. So in wtemp, I found that he was in. He logged in a couple times. So somebody asked me yesterday, maybe he logged in for a while. I think there was one login where he didn't log out for a long time. Did you find that also? The logins, yeah. So then I just went through some of the artifacts that we talked about. Web history. In web history, showed him browsing. It's not on here, but we saw him browsing specifically to the Widget Co. web server and running some of those commands. In his home directory, in a folder called Where's, we found the phma.sh, which was PHP, my PHP admin injection script. Some of the timeline stuff that mattered, most of the artifacts, or a lot of the artifacts, did not matter in a frame of time. There were specific artifacts that did matter, that tied directly to Dimitri browsing and making changes or accessing the Widget Co. web server. So those I would use in a timeline. But the rest of the stuff around this, if you added it to a timeline, it would really be... I don't think relevant. So the fact that Dimitri was browsing a lot of this stuff, looking, you could show his mindset because through the chat logs you saw that he was interacting on IRC with Raspi, asking some specific questions about how to get the UDEV TXT exploit to work. We saw that specifically, and it puts a mindset into this. So even if Dimitri says that he did not log in or was not logged in at the time of the attack, you can still try and show his...
Oh, yeah, okay.
He was trying to show his mindset. Or you can show his mindset that through the email that he had with Rasputin, through the chat logs that he had, through his behavior on the system. Now, the system, of course, was made for this scenario, so it had almost nothing else on it except for stuff designed to exploit the Widget Co. server. And it really looked like he was a pretty amateur kind of guy that got lucky. But he did steal a file. So if you look through his file system, And what I did was I just ran a find command on this file system for something named doc.tgz, because that was a leftover artifact from WidgetCo, and sure enough, we found it, and it matched by MB5. So he even though he was a bit of an amateur, he succeeded, and he stole data. You're never going to be able to put him behind the keyboard 100%. That's why we're looking at the behavior of the individual on the system. So what he was doing before and after, because without a web camera, you're just not going to catch him on the system. Although, don't discount that. Don't discount that. Many years ago when I was doing forensics for law enforcement, it was before smartphones, believe it or not. So before smartphones, we had good success. Now, most of the time, most of the stuff I was doing, this is in the early 2000s, was doing forensic analysis on contraband images, so very inappropriate images. And occasionally, our drug unit would actually listen to us and seize computers, because we always told the drug units that everybody's keeping records on the computers, they're keeping track of their accounts and whatnot, and we should grab their computer and be able to find their suppliers, and never found any of that information on the computers. But it was inevitable to find pictures of the drug dealers taking selfies of themselves with their grow operations or their refining operations. So the behavior is a big part of what we do in law enforcement forensics. And nowadays, everything's on a cell phone, so it's even more damning. Most of this information really jumped out quite plainly. Usually you're going to get more noise. If this is a person using a computer regularly, you're going to get more noise. It's going to be harder to find the needles here, whereas we don't even have a haystack for most of this. And the same is true of the web server. But the idea is to demonstrate, kind of some of the methodology that we do, what we go through, try to match these two things together. And the other big thing is that, forensics is not just on the operating system, not just on the memory, but also on all of these artifacts. And they constantly change. So this is old, but I think most of these artifacts function in a similar way. Incident response, it's inevitable that we're going to find new artifacts of interest in every investigation. There's rarely an investigation where Unix or Linux is not involved, at least somewhat. Sometimes it goes way back. There's still AIX servers out there running, and usually they're running because the individual who built the system that houses the database has built this AIX system 20 years ago, and it keeps the most relevant database for a company that keeps them running. And that individual that built the database retired 10 years ago, and his protege retired 5 years after that. So now nobody knows how to rebuild the system, and you'll find these strange operating systems running out there or applications running out there. But you have to have a baseline to know what the common artifacts are, and then you have to be able to go farther. Those were the big points. Is there any other big points that you had?
I think it's more or less the same, just regarding his bash history. It looks kind of the same because he was playing with those AT commands, and they look kind of the same as the commands executed on server side by the attacker. So this might also be a hint that he was the attacker.
Yeah, and you know, normally we don't get this luxury of looking at the attacker system as an incident responder. Yeah. So it is you know, something that sometimes is very relevant in a testing environment as well, as to see what the attacker would have seen if he ran certain backdoors or whatnot. It's to see what artifacts get left behind on his system that we don't normally get to see. So I'll ask a couple of things I'll leave you with then, is that we looked at artifacts on disk, okay? If I were looking through memory for strings, or if I was looking through unallocated space or page file or swap space, I may have to identify these records. And the idea is that, you know, first of all, you need to know the base structure itself. You have to know what it's going to look like on disk. And then if you want to search further, you can do that by looking for the structure. In our case, we had bash history, which is just a plain bunch of commands, right? And the only identifier is end of line. So that can be really difficult to find anything relevant in unallocated space. Now, take an example that I'm going to give you here, where I had 78 servers sent to me. It was the entire server population of a business, and they believed they had an insider that caused them damage. In fact, what happened was he reformatted or deleted all and reformatted them all. I'll explain it a little bit more as we go forward, but everything was damaged. So I have 78 images that I cannot see a file system on. It doesn't exist. 78. So I got lucky. I got lucky because he was not using bash. He was using Z shell, or Z shell, or however you want to say it. It is a different shell. And not only was he using it, he had timestamps turned on, which was really critical in this particular case, because I found commands in his history because I was able to I just did some grep searches for common commands like who or less or exit or whatever, and I found fragments of these history. And because it's in a very particular format, I was able to create a grep expression to search for that history across all unallocated space. And I didn't do this on all 78. I only did this on a sample set of 5 randomly chosen. I actually had really good success with this, and I was able to put together the... Oh, that's really hard to see, isn't it? It's okay. I was able to put together this history with timestamps. It's awesome when you have timestamps, because the first one, hard to see, but what he's doing is he's actually moving the legitimate version of some files on the operating system and then installing or copying a... subverted version, right? So he's moving the original pkill to original, and then he's copying over, the idiot system admin hackers pkill. Then he runs a bunch of commands. This has been sanitized. Oops, Joe Blow was not really his username. Finding pkill, moving it around, et cetera, looking around for stuff, shutting down. Incidentally, this was after the guy was fired, right? So I find these commands again. Where's the last one? Where's the one I'm looking for? So he's moving commands around, which is good. But it's after the guy's fired, but I have no logs. I have no logs because everything's been deleted. He actually ran rm -fr/ on all of these systems. So I found that command as well. That removes the whole file system. So Lucky, again, usually in your last log, your wtemp log, you can just run last-f and pipe that to wtemp. I assume that's how you did it on wtemp in this case. Okay. The problem with that is it only deals with files. So I was able to find login events on the system, but I couldn't run them because I could only deal with full files. Also, last-f, you have to run this 3 times to actually get all of the data out of it. But if you look at wtemp, it's in a very particular format. So it's in each one of these headers is all the information you can get out of wtemp. But there's a lot of white space because if you look at the format that it's in, you know, you've got an ASCII 256 character space, and it doesn't have to be filled, but it has to take up that space. So wtemp's an easy one to parse. And it's actually the only script I ever wrote. I was able to run the script against the unallocated space and find that the attacker had logged in after. So I ran this on these systems, and the attacker had run remove -fr/. And because I was able to carve these out, because I knew the structure, the data structure, you can carve for it using expressions, I was able to find that the attacker actually logged in after he was fired from a public library using his account credentials. So again, I couldn't say that this was the guy at the library that did it. Law enforcement would have to follow up with that. But I could say that using those account credentials, he was able to log in. And it's just simply by being familiar with the data structure and being able to carve it. Writing parsers and carvers are really important in these types of cases. That company, I think, went out of business. It was not a good thing. I don't think they paid us either. Anyways. So you got to be familiar with artifacts, got to know what's going on. It's not just about timelining. Timelining is great in incident response investigations, but for law enforcement type investigations, it's usually not as critical because usually it's the possession of something is the burden. Any questions? Okay, then I'll let you get back to your, what is it, finals? Study for finals? Writing papers? Into the terms coming up soon, right? All right, then, thanks.
I have a final comment, and that is on the report. So you're going to be delivering a report about what you did what you did for each day for this week and not what the collective group did. So in that way, then you have unique screenshots. I don't think that you need to have it in in the section for each day, but it might help. But then again, I don't think it's required. But at least don't make it too long with all your findings and like 20 pages is too much. In ideally, it shouldn't exceed one page, but I think that's more in text. So then you have one page per day with the text, and then excluding the screenshots.
Yeah.